Montreal, August 1968. Srila Prabhupada was in his room speaking with several disciples. "So Annapurna, you've got some news?" he asked. Annapurna was a young British girl. A few months ago, her father had written from England that he might be able to provide a house if some devotees came there. "Yes," she replied. "So what is our next program?" She was reticent. "That letter from your father is encouraging." "Yes, he encourages me, but he says he can't provide any place if we come there." Prabhupada looked disappointed. "That's all right. It's up to Krishna. When we go to someone to preach, we have to stand before them with folded hands with all humility. My dear sir, please take to Krishna consciousness." Prabhupada Pradyumna spoke up, "I was reading a book by this atheist, big atheist Swami. There are some letters in the back of the book, and I was looking at them." "Atheist Swami's book?" Prabhupada said. "We have nothing to do with." "I wasn't looking at his philosophy," Pradyumna explained. "I was just looking at the techniques he used when he was in America. He wanted to go to Europe, so he had a man, a rich benefactor, who went on a six-week tour of France, England, Germany, Switzerland, Holland, and then back, arranging lectures. That's how he did most of his tour. He had one or two influential people, and they arranged everything. And the lectures were arranged, and the society." "So you can arrange like that?" Prabhupada asked. "I was thinking there would be a Royal Asiatic Society in London. I think Thakur Bhaktivinod was a member of that." "But where is Thakur Bhaktivinod Sangha Association?" Prabhupada asked. "Well," Pradyumna continued, "still there may be some people you could open correspondence with. They might be interested in sponsoring you." "Is there anything about Krishna in that Swami's speech?" Prabhupada asked. "No," Prabhupada said thoughtfully. "In England he would have no place to stay." Pradyumna might talk of influential persons, traveling abroad, and making all the arrangements, but where were such persons? Here was a shy girl who could barely speak up, whose father would not help, and Pradyumna reading an atheist Swami and talking of a Royal Asiatic Society. But nothing practical. Prabhupada had plans, though. He had asked Mukunda and Shamasuna to go to London and try to establish an ISKCON center. They had agreed and would be arriving in Montreal from San Francisco in a few days. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Prabhupada's own spiritual master, had wanted Krishna consciousness in Europe. During the 1930s, he had sent his most experienced sannyasis to London, but they had returned, nothing accomplished. It wasn't possible to teach Krishna consciousness to the Malechas, they had complained. Europeans couldn't sit long enough to hear the Vaishnava philosophy. One of the sannyasis had met Lord Zetland, who had inquired curiously, "Swamiji, can you make me a brahmana?" The sannyasi had assured Lord Zetland he could certainly if Zetland would give up meat-eating, intoxication, gambling, and illicit sex. "Impossible," Lord Zetland had replied, and the sannyasis had accepted this response as the standard for all Europeans. The sannyasis had returned to India. Vaishnavism could never take hold in the West. Prabhupada had faith that his disciples would succeed. They would help him establish ISKCON centers in Europe, just as they had in North America. Certainly such success would greatly please Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Prabhupada told of a man who found a gourd lying on the road and picked it up, and then found a stick and a wire and picked them up. In themselves, the three parts were useless, but by putting the gourd, the stick, and the wire together, the man made a veena and began to play beautiful music. Similarly, Prabhupada had come to the West and found some rejected youth lying here and there, and he himself had been rejected by the people of New York City. But by Krishna's grace, the combination had become successful. If his disciples remained sincere and followed his orders, they would succeed in Europe. So Krishna consciousness had somehow or other already spread from New York City to San Francisco. It was not exactly what the devotees had expected would happen, but it did happen. One day Prabhupada announced that he was going to San Francisco. Mukunda had already gone ahead and he had arranged everything, and there were so many people interested in Krishna consciousness even before Prabhupada had ever been there. So many devotees were already there, because Prabhupada was greeted on the airport by a band of hippies, some dressed in long sheepskin dress, other ones in Merlin the wizard ropes, and Mukunda himself in a Japanese kimono, and some hippies with bells and lots of incense. But all of them had been told by Mukunda that Prabhupada liked chanting of Hare Krishna. So when Prabhupada arrived, they were all chanting Hare Krishna on the airport. And they all bowed down. So Prabhupada was very pleased. From there, he initiated many devotees. And he desired that these devotees would go to London. So somehow or other, Prabhupada sent his devotees to London and wanted them to find a place, and it was difficult in those early days just to start with nothing. The pioneering days, though, were very exciting because Prabhupada was there, it was a handful of people, and the whole thing was depending on Prabhupada sending devotees and then promising that soon he would come. So that created a lot of pressure. Right? They really had to do something because Prabhupada was coming. Right? So you had to be ready to receive him. You had to have something when Prabhupada would come. So this was the system that worked every time again. It was a tremendous inspiration to go somewhere, try and find a place, and just waiting for Prabhupada to arrive. Right? And then it would really happen in that place. And you'd announce it, and it would really happen whenever Prabhupada would come. There was no doubt about it. When Prabhupada visited the place, then suddenly the whole place came to life. Brahmananda was in Kenya and in Nairobi, and he had cultivated some of the Indians that lived there. And they were helping him. So they were using one hall, but that was about it. Preaching to the Africans, Brahmananda told Prabhupada, it's impossible. Prabhupada said, impossible? Why? He said, it's very easy. Just open the doors of the hall. And they opened the doors of the hall, and he said, now have a kirtan. And they had a big kirtan, and in about 15 minutes, the whole hall was full of black people that were all jumping up and down and looking and very interested. And Prabhupada said, now give them prasad, right? See how easy it is to preach to the local people. So Prabhupada, everywhere, revolutionized the preaching himself. It is said that one of the associates of Lord Chaitanya is so powerful that he can deliver the entire universe. It's not an ordinary thing. So Lord Krishna certainly send us, or Lord Chaitanya send us such an intimate associate in Srila Prabhupada. There is no doubt that he could deliver the entire universe. And that in fact he is still doing that, because Prabhupada's work is carrying on. We have not yet seen the full result of Prabhupada's work. The momentum is still carrying forward. His books are still being printed, still being distributed. Still many people are coming. Although Prabhupada is not personally present, but somehow or other Prabhupada continues to preach. And it is on the strength of Prabhupada's preaching that ultimately we accept this Krishna consciousness, which is difficult. It is, as the other disciples of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said, it's difficult in the West because it's something hard to relate to. Right? It's practically means giving up life. Right? No meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex. That is everything we do, everything we live for, everything we work for, right, is one of those things. And then they have to be given up. So it is a total transformation. So Prabhupada could inspire people on the strength of his faith. Prabhupada actually knew that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada actually knew that the natural state of consciousness is to be a devotee of Krishna, because Prabhupada was at that state of consciousness. And therefore, he was able to convince so many people, because they had to admit that actually they were just bluffing. Right? Everybody has philosophies, everybody knows so many things, and yes, you know, yes, some were saying it's Buddhism, someone else is saying, yes, I am a philosopher, very nice, whatever it might have been. But ultimately, in front of Prabhupada, who could maintain such a thing? Right? Who could maintain such a thing? It was very difficult. When Prabhupada was arriving on an airport in America, many journalists came for interviews, and they were firing questions one after another. But one journalist had arrived late, and he had brought his photographer, and Prabhupada had already left the other reporters behind and was now walking on the airport. And this one reporter was just running after Prabhupada because he didn't get his story yet, and he had to have it. And cameraman running, you know, like, and there they were, you know, cameraman, flash, flash, flash. He got his photos, and the reporter just pushed a microphone under Prabhupada's nose and said, "What's the difference between you and any other Buddhists?" Right? Which, you know, we might consider a pretty stupid question. Right? But we should just take it from the professional's point of view. Here we have, he was just thinking, religious, prominent religious person, right? Okay. So, you know, what are the kind of questions you ask the prominent religious person? Of the exotic type, you know, of the exotic oriental type, you know, some sort of Buddhist or whatever, you know, all the same, right? So that's where his question came from, right? So Prabhupada just simply pointed out that Krishna consciousness has nothing to do with religion, right? Has nothing to do with this ism or that ism, with Buddhism or Hinduism or any other ism, but that Krishna consciousness is what you have forgotten. Right? It is what you have forgotten. Right? So the interviewer just looked like, oh my God, what have I forgotten? You know, did I forget something? Right? He's kind of bewildered for a moment. But indeed, Prabhupada was teaching us what we have forgotten. Right? And that is exactly the conclusion of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhya Kabunai Savanadi Sudha Chitta Karya Udaye. That actually we are eternally Krishna conscious, but somehow or other we have become covered. And now we can reawaken. Jeev jago, jeev jago, gora chanda bole, kotra nira jaya maya pisa chira kala. We're singing this song about Lord Gauranga. It said that Lord Gauranga goes around and performs Harinam, and he calls out loud, "Jeev jago, jeev jago, wake up sleeping souls, wake up sleeping souls." Now, what is he doing, right? Is it just that he wants people to get up from bed? No, that's not just what he wants. Right? Obviously, he says, "Kotra nida jayo maya pisa chira kole, for so long you have been sleeping on the lap of the witch Maya. Wake up!" So he's talking about more than waking up the body. He's talking about waking up the soul. Because it is explained that when the soul becomes embodied, that soul goes into a dormant state. So this is very important to understand, that at present the soul is kind of asleep. Right? And therefore, the normal energy of the soul is not available now. Just only a little bit. Vakreshwar Pandit. Today was his appearance day? Yes. Vakreshwar Pandit was a devotee of Lord Chaitanya, who could dance 72 hours non-stop. And Lord Chaitanya said that if I would have two like you, I could fly. He said, Vakreshwar, you are like my wing. If I would have two of you, I would be able to fly. Right? It is just, you make me fly, Vakreshwar. Your dancing makes me dance, right? I mean, when anybody sees your dancing, how can we not dance? You know, you have to dance. Vakreshwar Pandit's dancing was that amazing. Right. So, the one time, Shiv Ram Maharaj said, this movement is a movement of endless kirtan and devouring huge quantities of prasad. Therefore, for this, you need a spiritual body. He pointed out. So that's a profound, profound statement. Realized, very realized. Right? We can relate to it. It is a fact that it's not so easy to just always dance non-stop. That's very difficult. And to just do it again. Sari ra vijaja. You know, not another feast. Yes, one more. You can do it. Oh no, my kidneys, my liver. You know, we're transcendental to kidneys and livers, you know. Go for it, come on. That's yes. But I'm fool, doesn't matter, you know. Lord Chaitanya would personally force the devotees to eat as much as five men could eat. Right. And Prabhupada also would encourage devotees to take more and more prasadam. Right, and it had to be taken, yes. So prasadam is very important. Without prasadam, no one can be a devotee. It is the way that we can actually somehow or other control the senses. The chanting of Hare Krishna is purifying the heart. Yes, the hearing from Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures is inspiring us. The kirtans also, they sweep us up in a nice thing, and with all that it helps. But without prasadam, no chance. No chance at all. Right. Therefore, it is through this combination of Krishna prasadam and kirtan that Lord Chaitanya's movement is spreading everywhere. And Prabhupada said that, he said that there, on the Sunday feast, right, where there is spontaneous chanting and dancing, and Krishna Prasad, there surely Lord Gauranga is personally present. So we should not underestimate that the power of the Sunday feast is quite special. Because Lord Chaitanya is personally present, providing there's dancing, chanting, and prasad. No. Any Sunday feast where that didn't happen. I have never been to one. Right? We see every Sunday Lord Chaitanya is present. Yes. And that is a great blessing. So anybody who comes to such feasts is being blessed very, very much. By the presence of Lord Chaitanya. We should not underestimate such a thing. It is said that before we begin the class, we recite the Mangala Charan, right? The prayers to the spiritual master, to the previous acharyas, to Lord Chaitanya and the Panchatattva and to Radha Krishna, to the Vaishnavas. Like that, we are chanting these prayers. Right? And as we are chanting the names of the Acharyas, or of Lord Chaitanya, or of Radha Krishna, then we are invoking their presence. Right? As we are chanting, actually we get the blessings of them. We get the blessings. Yes. When we're chanting Jai Radha Madhava, at that time, Vrindavan manifests. Vrindavan is there. Right? It's not just a song, you know. It's not like, and now folks, we're going to chant you this song from India, you know, you're going to really like it, Indian folk song, you know. Hi, folks. Like that. No, it's not a folk song. It is actually, it is a transcendental description of the spiritual world. And by the sound vibration, the spiritual world is manifesting here. So Prabhupada was totally aware of these things. He was directly experiencing it. He was so absorbed. It is said that when Prabhupada chanted Jai Radha Madhava, it was so intense. He put in so much energy. And he chanted it with so much life and so much energy that everyone just felt, wow, that was really powerful, right? Very powerful, yes. That is actually the difference. The difference is where one places the energy. Of course, since we do not have spiritual bodies as it is, we must know how to balance our energy in the service of Krishna. That is an art. Right? We must know where our priorities lie and always save energy for that. Like the chanting of Hare Krishna. If we don't save energy for the chanting of Hare Krishna, then what's the point of all our endeavor? We may be doing so much service for Krishna and run around all day, and then we crash at night, you know, like totally exhausted, and the next day we're so tired we can't chant Hare Krishna in the morning, and then we chant only 3 rounds, and then we got 13 rounds left in the day which are impossible to chant, and then we've got only 10 done at night, and then we say, I really tried and I couldn't do it, you know, and I couldn't get up early either, I was too tired. Then it meant we didn't distribute our energy properly. We're just running around like without using our brains, right? And Krishna consciousness means we have to use our brains. We have to distribute our energy properly. So we have to save energy for chanting the holy name, whatever it takes, right? That we have to hold back. So it's not that we just blindly throw ourselves in. It's like, you know, in the ecstasy. And then the next day, you know, when all the ecstasy is over, no, I can't chant, I got a headache. No, I can't get up now, too much kirtan yesterday. Too much prasad, you know, too much ecstasy. This morning, no, I can't move, no, go away. No, that's not... That's not the way. One has to know how to distribute the energy. Unlimited opportunity, but limited time, limited energy, limited ability with us, with a material body. Right. So we have to work it out like that. That we make the best use of the bad bargain, this material body. Then we can be successful. Prabhupada was simply inquiring from Pradyumna, who was advising to use the technique of the Mayavadi Swami. Prabhupada was simply asking, does he mention anything about Krishna? No. Okay, then forget it. As simple as that. Only transcendental considerations. Because it said Krishna is He is the supreme conqueror. He always wins every battle. Yatra Krishna Yogeshwara Tatasri Vijayir Bhutir. Wherever there is Krishna, the supreme mystic, there will be victory, it is pointed out. Yes, that's how it is. Wherever there is Krishna, there will be victory. Prabhupada sent his devotees to the west, and at one point Prabhupada made a statement. He said, there is not one place that is better than another place for spreading Krishna consciousness. He said, every place is a good place for spreading Krishna consciousness. Everywhere. It's illusion to think this place it's good, that place it's bad. No, every place is possible. It can be spread anywhere and everywhere. One has to know how to do it. Sometimes people don't want to take, right? They don't want to take to Krishna consciousness. Then we have to become tactful. There's the story of the panther and the chameleon. There was once a group of hunters. They went into the forest and they had dogs and horses coming into the forest like that, you know, so much noise. All the animals knew it's serious business. They were running away in all directions. At one point, there was a big black panther, and this panther was running and running and running, and he heard the hunters coming, and he knew that it was dangerous, so he just hid himself in a bush, you know. And then there was a voice next to him, and the voice said, why don't you do like me? He looked. There was nobody there. What is this voice? Just do like me. Become green. And he looked. It was a chameleon. And that chameleon had turned green just like the leaves on the branches. And the panther said to him, you know, I can't do that. I am a panther, you know. I don't turn green. And the hunters came down in the direction of the bush and the dogs were howling and the panther just jumped out of the bush and roared, you know, rawr, very loud. And it was a bit of a tug. You know, he smashed a few dogs. He got like one of the horses and then they shot him, you know, bang, panther died. Chameleon escaped. Right. So what should we be? Panthers or chameleons? However, then one day the chameleon was somehow or by an act of fate was captured by someone and put in a cage and sold as a pet, and he wound up in some family home somewhere in a little cage. One day while the parents were away, the young boy was playing with the chameleon and he let him out on the kitchen table, which had a red and white striped tablecloth on it. And as the chameleon was on the table, he tried to escape. And as he tried to escape, he tried to change colors really fast. He tried to take on the red and white stripes of the tablecloth, and while moving, tried to change the pattern on his back so that he would move invisibly. Right? You can imagine he had to change colors so fast that he died because of a heart attack, you know. It's just like too much to change colors so fast. He just like just choked in it, you know. And there he was lying dead on the red and white striped tablecloth, right? So what to be? A chameleon or a panther? Well, any ideas? He wants to be a tablecloth. But that's impersonal. That's not going to help you to become an impersonal tablecloth. That's not a good proposal. No, a panther. Should we in our mood be like a panther or should we in our mood be like a chameleon? Panter. Okay, one vote for the Panter. Panter Chameleon, vote. He has to think about it. Abstention. Okay, no voting. Okay. Okay, one abstention. Okay, you're remembering. One for, one abstention. Yes? Panter. Okay, two Panter. Two Panters, one abstention. Okay, remember. Three Panters, one abstention. Okay. Then you're an abstention. Are you going to vote? Or both? Yes, that is true. That's the better answer. Yeah, the better answer depends on the circumstance, right? Well, I would say a Vaishnava is a Panter at heart. Right, we are Panters at heart, you know, because the Panter, he stood up for what he believed, for what he was, you know, instead of the slimy chameleon who just, at the face of someone, changed color, you know, who just kind of like, yeah, talks with everybody. Yes, yes, I agree with you. Very, oh yeah, 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 very nice. Take everybody's color, you know. I mean, like, he has no character, he has no spine, right? That's weak, you know. So Vaishnava is ready to stand up and call a spade, say it's nonsense, it's maya, you know. It's unedible, you know, it's a corpse, you know, right? A filthy, rotten corpse, you know, how can you eat it, right? We should be willing to speak like panthers. But yet, if it doesn't work for making people accept Krishna consciousness, only then, not for our own self-protection or our own comfort or for our own fear, etc. Then, but if it doesn't work for Krishna consciousness, we become chameleons. Yes, then we become chameleons. No problem. But it's not our preferred position. The preferred position is Panther. Because the preferred position is to be open and honest and straightforward. That's what we want to be. But we're not total fools, right? That we cannot be tactful, that we cannot adjust a little bit to the people so that they can accept us. Right? We do not always have to put Krishna in everybody's face immediately. Hari Bol, you know, here it is. Hari Bol, it's Krishna, you know. Take,
it's Krishna, Krishna's good, the Supreme Personality of God, and you should take, yes, very good for you, chant, Haribol, Haribol, now it's, you'll be beautified, very nice.
please,
you know. No, you'll be beautified, very good for you, Hare Krishna, right, yes, Haribol, Haribol.
Not like that, right, it's Prabhupada sometimes would just say, good morning, right? And the devotee said, Prabhupada, why are you saying good morning to that person? Why didn't you say Hare Krishna, right? Prabhupada said, I said good morning so that he could wish me a good morning and then make spiritual advancement. Good morning. Good morning, sir. It's just like, yes, if you wish Prabhupada a good morning, it's not ordinary. Right. You make a lot of spiritual advancement. Inconceivable, but yet the case. So, some tact is also there in preaching. Some strategy is also there in preaching. One must know, right, when to be bold, and one must know when to be tactful. Sometimes Prabhupada was so bold. In Kobe, Kobe is in Japan, right, they went with the bullet train from Tokyo to Kobe, right, 360 k's an hour, you know, right, an hour later in Kobe, on the other side of Japan, there was this Indian gentleman, he was very favorable, and he was talking about donating a whole building to the devotees. Yes, many stories, a whole building. Well, the devotees, they were, yes, Mr. Agarwal, yes, we love you, Mr. Agarwal, whatever you want some prasad, Mr. Agarwal, a
whole building he was about to give Gauranga. Can you imagine, you know, how the devotees were acting, right? And Prabhupada came, and, well, there was a program planned that there were, Prabhupada was invited, and there was also another Swami from India, Swami Mayavadananda, so, you know, Swami Mayavadananda or something like that, right? Some impersonalist Swami was also there. So anyway, it was arranged that first Prabhupada would speak and then the other person. Now, they had, the devotees were checking the arrangements on the stage that were made by the man, and there was a small seat for the speaker, and then on the same stage there was a big seat with a picture of the man's guru, right? And the devotee said, oh, no, but Prabhupada has to sit on that seat. He has to sit on the big seat. He's a big acharya, world acharya. I mean, he has to sit on the big seat. He can't sit on the small seat. He has to sit on the big seat. He said, no, it's my guru's seat. No one can sit on, but my guru said, no, but Prabhupada is also a guru. So, you know, he's like, so he should be able to sit there. So finally, the man said, all right then, okay, he can sit there, but then the other Swami should also sit on there. Right? Otherwise, you know, so it's like, so yeah, they said, yeah, that's okay. And then, you know, like they arranged it and the program started and Prabhupada gave his lecture, he gave his talk, and Prabhupada sat down on the Vyasasan, and then his talk was over, and then it was the turn of the Mayavadi Swami, and the host was inviting Prabhupada to, you know, come down with Vyasasan, and Prabhupada wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. He just stayed on there. And he tried to get him off, and Prabhupada wouldn't do it. But it's just like, the man's like, you know, they couldn't pull him off. So in the end, Prabhupada just kept on sitting, and he didn't know what to do anymore. So then, finally, you know, the other Swami came, and he was standing there, and he couldn't get on the Vyasasana. So finally, they put him on the small Vyasasana, while Prabhupada was sitting next on the big Vyasasana. Then the man started his lecture, and Prabhupada let it go on for about, it was in Hindi. So no one could understand, but the audience could, because there were many Indians, but the devotees couldn't understand. So after about 10 minutes, Prabhupada said to the devotees, start a kirtan. So the devotees just started the kirtan, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, as they would have kirtans in those days, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama, Hare Hare. That was the favorite tune, you know, of those days. And they had that that kirtan, and it just totally drowned out the man, right? And after that, Prabhupada said, he said, at first it was all right. He said, but then he began to speak this impersonalist philosophy. It was intolerable. And he just started the kirtan like that. And the owner, or over the man, the big donor, was so upset. So upset. Right? The devotees were like also upset. Everybody was upset. Except Prabhupada and Krishna. They were very happy. And Prabhupada came down of the Vyasasana and was very happy. And like, you know, the owner was shaking his head, you know, how good could you work? But he didn't dare to say anything to Prabhupada. So he said to the devotees, but in such a way that Prabhupada could hear it, how could your spiritual master act like that? You know, how could your guru act like that? It's like, I'm shocked, you know. But Prabhupada didn't care. He wasn't going to flatter the man just for a building, right? He didn't care about the building, right? He was sure that wherever there was pure preaching going on, right? Strong and panther-like, pure, straight, Krishna-conscious preaching, right? That Krishna would reciprocate and that everything would come. After all, Krishna is the supreme proprietor. He owns everything and anything, right? So he can give whatever he wants. Yes. Then again, at other times, Prabhupada was very tactful and very gentle and considerate. And Like that, one must know how to preach according to time, place, and circumstance. Kala Desha Patra. This principle of Kala Desha Patra, or time, place, and circumstance, is very important. Prabhupada came to America, and in the beginning he studied America. He looked at America. He didn't just begin to preach, but he looked at it, what it was like, etc. So for a while he was checking out the culture, and then he started his real preaching work. Yes. Kala Desha Patra. And Prabhupada said that it's not that the standards for spreading Krishna consciousness are necessarily the same for one country as it is for another, or meaning for India and the West. And that's where his god brothers could not understand, because they came from India and they felt very lost in the West. Before I was a devotee, one time I was in this youth center at the time. I was writing for their magazine, so I was regularly hanging out there. It was some sort of lots of meditation and all kinds of things were going on in that place. And then one day, there was an Indian Swami who came, right? And the man needed a place to stay. So it was arranged that he would stay with me. So I took him home. And he felt so uncomfortable, right? And all the time he was telling me that tomorrow I'm going to some monastery and it will be very nice because then I can stay with religious people. He never tried, you know, to see if I was really interested or not, which I was, obviously. I mean, you can imagine, having wound up like this. Right? He didn't try. He just assumed that I was like unapproachable because, you know, like in his eyes, I was something too alien, you know, like too strange, too Western, such bad habits. He was abhorred, you know. I did have some bad habits. There was no doubt about it, right? I don't deny. But Prabhupada did not care about these things. Prabhupada simply convinced people, made them see that the habits were bad, and then started a program to change our lives. Prabhupada went to live with the hippies on the Lower East Side, the lowest place of New York. Prabhupada lived on the Bowery, where he had to step over the bodies of the bums, right? Prabhupada did all that. Prabhupada dealt with crazies, with druggies, and I mean, when we read about it, it is one thing, but if we see the video of Prabhupada in 1966 in New York, if you've seen it and you see those people there, they say, oh my God, you know. It would be like if in Amsterdam we leave the door permanently open and we let everybody and anybody come in, right? Anybody. And we just let it all happen. And we chant Hare Krishna, and Gauranga would be here all by himself. Nobody to help him, and he would have to preach. Right? It was like that. Prabhupada had to be all by himself in that condition, and he did it. Yes. I'm sure he's also going to do it. Mahajana Yenigata Sapanta. He says he gave a nod of confirmation. Somehow or other, by strong preaching, Prabhupada did not kill himself. Prabhupada didn't give a lecture every night. Prabhupada gave a lecture a few nights in the week. And he didn't create a program for himself which was too intense. He kind of kept a balance, the balance of the energy. So all this is also required for us. Prabhupada went to live in that insane condition, but maintained his sanity. He had a little room in the back, and there he himself kept a normal program. Prabhupada kept on rising early in the morning. Prabhupada kept on translating. Prabhupada never changed his schedule, and yet he made himself available. Three nights a week there were classes, and then for other times he was ready to speak to people also and meet them. And in this way, on the strength of personal relationship, Prabhupada was able to start the movement. And when he made it a movement, nobody liked it very much. One day some lawyer just stood up in the back of the lecture and asked for some people to sign some papers so that they could start like an official society, and everyone thought, what are we doing now? But anyway, they liked Prabhupada so much that, and he wanted it, so then some people said, all right, then I'll sign. And that was it. And ISKCON was born in 1966 in that way. So Prabhupada did very, very nice. We can continue all together, and it can be done also if each of us somehow or other tries to be what Prabhupada wanted us to be. If we become what Prabhupada wanted us to be, then Prabhupada will continue to live through us, you see. Therefore, we should not like hesitate and try and be what we want to be. No, we should simply be what Prabhupada wanted us to be. And then Prabhupada will live through us, and we will live with Prabhupada. And then, naturally, we will just become transformed, because anyone who lives with Prabhupada became transformed, right? Just like in Japan, there was one boy, one Japanese boy, just in that program, there was just on that train to Kobe, there was just somehow or other one Japanese boy. The devotees had picked him up somehow or other. He was brand new. And when Prabhupada saw this Japanese boy, that was the first Japanese boy, Prabhupada fixed his mind, he was going to be a devotee. There was just no doubt about it, he was going to be a devotee. I mean, he hadn't really planned to be a devotee, but he had come somehow or other. Devotees had picked him off the street and got him to come, and he really hadn't made up his mind that he was going to be a devotee. But there was no escape, and Prabhupada was going to make him a devotee. He made him a devotee, and now he's a sannyasi, right? In our movement, right? He never himself came on his own thinking, I'm going to join, right? But somehow or other, he came as a visitor, and that was it. Came close to Prabhupada. He became a devotee. So, somehow or other, if we also come close to Prabhupada by just being what Prabhupada wanted, then Prabhupada will become very, very much manifest in our life. And when Prabhupada is manifest in our life, then we will also be able to fly, just like Vakreshwar Pandit, right? We'll be able to fly. Then we'll become so inspired that we'll be just amazing. We never thought that we could do it, right? We thought like, well, you know, whatever we are, we don't know. But saints, you know, well, saint, like, give us a break, you know. Not entirely. But yes, even we can become saints, right? It is possible. Prabhupada can turn swans in, or crows into swans. Sorry, not swans into crows. That's our business. We can turn swans into crows. So, somehow or other, let us take shelter. I'll stop with that. Any questions, any comments? Two questions? Or it wasn't? Peace. Peace, brother. Ban the bomb, you know. Flower power.
Sometimes devotees like to say, well, Prabhupada said this, Prabhupada said that, and because they read it in the Leela Amrita and so on, other books. But you just said that Prabhupada also preaches place, time, circumstances. So how, in what way is it appropriate to preach in that way then?
Yeah, we have to be careful. Just Prabhupada said, we have to really understand whether it was a general instruction or a specific instruction for Kaladesha Patra, time, place, and circumstance. Therefore, it takes confirmation, right, from the experienced senior Vaishnavas. Like, if you know the Prabhupada consistently said, you know, he consistently said a certain point again and again, right? Then we know it's a general instruction, right? But if it was like, yeah, a one-time thing, you know, to one particular disciple, then we give it less weight. Then we'll say, well, Prabhupada did say once to a person, you know, like, you can do like this. So there is some precedent, we'll say, but it wasn't like a general policy. Yeah. Whereas if Prabhupada said the same thing again and again, you know, then we understand that it was clearly a general instruction. Yeah. So we can confirm with experienced devotees if we are, just to make sure that we don't get it wrong. That's the idea. And we always do. That's like I saw the other day, there's a sannyasi conference, right? And then there's uncommon, and there's some discussion, you know, about different topics. So one topic came up, which was that someone had said that in the last few years, Prabhupada didn't want to actually give sannyas anymore, right? That he wasn't so eager to give sannyas anymore because there were problems with sannyasis, right? So then there was some discussion, and finally someone said that I think that Hari Sori would be the authority in this matter because he was Prabhupada's personal servant at the time, right? So he would probably know better than anybody what Prabhupada really thought about the matter. So then Hari Sori was asked, and then he gave his explanation, and he said, "Well, from what I seen at that time, Prabhupada was upset that some sannyasis had gotten into difficulties and had given up their vows, but no, he was still going on giving sannyas, and it was his initiative, right? It wasn't like that." He was pressurized or pushed into it. No, Prabhupada wanted. He took the initiative, right? Because Hari Sori knew these things. He was there when the correspondence was being handled, so he understood, you know, when it was an idea of Prabhupada or if it was an idea from Prabhupada's secretary or coming out of the field from the devotees. It's very interesting if we read this Lilamrita, right? We're reading like the outside story. What did Prabhupada do? Where did he go? Right? You read the whole Lilamrita. Where did Prabhupada go? What did he do? And then you read Hari Sori's four diaries. And then you read like what happened when Prabhupada came home. Like after the programs, you know, like they went to the programs and then Prabhupada came home, closed the door. And then Hari Sori was with Prabhupada. So Hari Sori, you find out what happened then. Right? So it fills in the blanks. So it's very interesting like that. Yeah. So that's why it's nice to read these different books about Prabhupada. Prabhupada started the Free Love Feast, right? And that's how it was. And it was very much his desire and mood at the time. However, you know, like over the years, in certain places it's been felt that as a policy, sometimes it's good to charge because if you don't charge, you get all the renegades and all the bums, and you don't get any decent people. And that's how it was here in Amsterdam at one point. It was like
a social drop-in center with people from Tamagun and below, right? If there is anything lower than Tamagun, just go and look in the alleys of Amsterdam and you'll find them, right? Whatever it was. So when they started charging, they got a better caliber of people, right? So that's why in certain conditions it's better to charge sometimes. So it's a managerial point. For managerial reasons, we may charge at times. But if it is at all possible to give prasadam free, much better. If we charge for financial reasons, that's not so good. If it is a preaching strategy, it's one thing. But if it's for financial reasons, then it would be better to get one person to sponsor the feast every Sunday, if that's the problem. If money is the reason, then the other technique used in many temples around the world successfully is one person sponsors the feast every Sunday, and it's free. Right? So for that would be good. But if it is to get a better public insight, and to keep out the lower modes, then it may be all right to charge. Well, not all the people, but at least some people. Yeah. Well, sometimes the other way around, like you just start giving from the little bit you've got from your own pocket with the faith that will create the goodwill that people will start giving. Yeah? Prabhupada operated like that. I also operate like that sometimes. Sometimes I give everything away and, I'm thinking, well, it will come back, And then it also, sometimes it's a bit of a struggle, but eventually it will come back. Yeah. So we should think like that. Should be generous. Krishna will provide. Prabhupada wrote this famous statement. He said, "We are ready to feed the whole world." And it wasn't hollow. It was serious. He was ready to feed the whole world. Of course, he would engage half the world in feeding the other half. Right? That's how he would do it, obviously. But he was ready. He was ready. Prabhupada was ready to become the head of the world. At least half, so that they could feed the other half.
Well, I don't really have a question, but I want to say that I heard that Prabhupada said it's non-profit movement.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you can ask what you made it for.
The cost. Well, a non-profit movement can also mean that, we have to do so many things, things to pay, It's not just what's on your plate that you pay. You pay for the chairs, right? And the chairs are broken again, right? And the tablecloths have just been replaced, And, there's new cushion covers, right? That every Sunday feast guest sits on with his, every Sunday nicely soft little pillow, right? You're getting here, in the Hare Krishna temple. And by rubbing your body over the soft pillow, just to sit comfortable, after a couple of months, we need a new set again. And who's going to pay for it, right? So we put a little profit on the pakoras so we can get you a new seat cover, right? So you could also look like that, So what's the profit? I mean, there's no profit. There's no profit in this place, It's like, do you understand? It's not running on a profit. So what do you mean, no profit? Or what does Prabhupada mean, no profit? It's difficult to understand. On another time, it came to back to Godhead and Brahmananda, wanted to put in more pages, And Prabhupada said, "Why you want to put in more pages?" He said, "Well, then we can give them more for their money." Prabhupada said, "We should give them less for their money. We should take their money." Right? So, I don't know if Prabhupada was entirely into not making profit, but as far as prasadam is concerned, it certainly is nice to give for free. That's generally... Huh?
Now I
Prasadam we like to give for free if possible, but here in Amsterdam, I would personally separate the two. You know, I would have a place where prasadam is either free or very cheap, right? Somewhere downtown, and where, you know, you deal with that kind of public, and I would deal with another public here. I would deal, see, the mode of ignorance people, I would keep them a few kilometers away from here, and I wouldn't let them in. Not at all, you know, no mode of ignorance in the building. You know, in the building means mode of goodness, and otherwise, you know, go to the other place, it's very nice, it's for you, you know, cheap and best. And this place, I would keep it really like mode of goodness-like, because otherwise, you know, you can't keep any devotees, and you don't get any devotees of caliber, and nobody wants to join, you see. Then nobody wants to live in the temple, and then you got an empty temple. Yeah, because it's tough to be a devotee in Amsterdam. It's not exactly what you call the most ideal condition for being a devotee, these cities, you know, very tough. Not only Amsterdam. I mean, when you're in New York, in Brooklyn, it's this huge building, very, very big building, and it is as if the green hands of the modes of material nature are growing into the window. You know, like you have these movies of the plants that begin to grow, you know, like it's like that. And outside it's just inconceivable, you know, it's such a jungle. Oh my God, you know. Heavy duty. Heavy, heavy. 6 a.m, you see this guy walking around, black guy, got a big pipe wrench in his hand. Big pipe wrench. It's just like, well, what's he doing? Plumbing so early in the morning? It's like, well, maybe cross the street, you know. There's rosters in the road, you know, like, and they are connecting to the New York sewage. And the little kids, they have fishing lines and they're fishing in the sewage. God knows what floats around the sewage. Everything is there. New Yorkers have put everything inside, from piranhas to crocodiles to anything that lives, you know. It's all there. And the city makes this noise. You hear it. It's called the rumble. The rumble. From the city. From all the exhaust fans, all the cars, and all the machines in the whole city together make the rumble. Yeah. Yeah, that's why, like, I mean, I met a New Yorker here some time ago, and he was saying, I love Amsterdam, I love it. He said, it's so peaceful here, so quiet. I never thought of it like that, you know. So peaceful, so quiet, I really love it here. That's the thing, like, interesting. No questions in the back today. Yeah, there's one.
I heard some statement from one devotee that if you marry in Krishna consciousness, that you come to the complete beginning of spiritual life.
Things you hear, you know. Don't listen to things like that, okay? Just don't listen. Nah. No, it's all external. It's external, you know. I mean, What does it all have to do with, like, being married or being a sannyasi or being a brahmachari or being a vanaprastha? All that is mundane. It doesn't matter. It depends what you do with it. You know? What are you going to do with it for Krishna? Yeah. When you are a grihastha, you have your griha, you know, your big, big griha. It's up to you if you make it very Krishna conscious, if you use it all for Krishna, if you use it for hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna. Yeah? These three things are our business, hearing, chanting, and remembering. So if your house is full of hearing, chanting, and remembering of Krishna, it's Vaikuntha. Yeah, very nice. And then it's a real ashram. So grihastha is a very sacred position. It's holy, right? Grihasthas are worshipable people. They are very special. They're extraordinary. Where do you find such people who are ready to dedicate their lives to four regulative principles, right? A man and a woman living in one place and they're living a life of purity, right? Restricting themselves, following regulative principles, chanting rounds, keeping deities, eating only Krishna prasadam. How can anyone think that that's not exalted? I mean, it's like, it's incredible. It's very nice. So, all glories to the grihasthas. Now your wife got inspired.
I think that, well, the chopping technique didn't, it also meant really, what Prabhupada meant with the chopping technique was, you use a particular argument, right? And you just hammer them with that same argument. You find their weak spot, like the Christians, and thou shalt not kill, right? And then Prabhupada would just hammer them on that point, and he wouldn't let go. And he would just go back, you know, and say, yes, but it says thou shalt not kill, you know. But it means that we are, it means not murder, you know, but, no, thou shalt not kill, right? Yeah, Prabhupada just, would just hit on that spot. So the chopping technique, refers to that. Chopping down with arguments in a strong way. Sometimes aggressive. There's that story of the Hindu professor, Ravindra Sarup comes, introduces this Hindu professor, right? And so he's teaching Hinduism. So Prabhupada said to him, what is Hinduism? First thing he asked, the man comes in, he's introduced as a professor of Hinduism. Prabhupada said, what is Hinduism? The man says, that's hard to say, right? It is such a complex thing, right? Prabhupada said, this is my disciple, Sarup Damodar. He's also a PhD. Sarup Damodar, what would you call that? Cheating, Prabhupada. That's right, you know, cheater. And, you know, within 3 minutes, they had a fight. A big fight. And Prabhupada just bang, hammering him over the head. And like it was going on for quite some time and it was getting worse and worse until finally Brahmananda. What went up to the professor and said, I think it's better you get out of here before you commit more offenses. And the professor left, and Ravindra Sarup was like, oh my God, I've cultivated this professor for a few years. Look at what's going on. Oh God. He never went back to that professor, you know. 20 years later, he met this professor. Professor said,
He said, you know, you remember when I met Swami Bhaktivedanta Ravindra, was thinking, oh no, oh no, no, he's going to start the whole thing again. The professor said, you know something? He was right. We can't imitate. Prabhupada also said that. In Massachusetts, in MIT, there were these Indians and they were preaching about Mayavad, Mayavad, and Prabhupada said, finally grabbed one by the shirt and said, what is this, a shirt or a cotton ball? If it's all one, is this a shirt or a cotton ball? Right? And like that, you know. Prabhupada later said that, he said, old men and children get away with practically anything. He said, I can do like that, but you cannot. So we can't imitate. Okay, now it's your turn.
Sometimes Prabhupada is physically not well, or at etc. So people were wondering, me including, that is this because of only Krishna's arrangement, or does Prabhupada as a pure devotee have actually karma?
No, Prabhupada does not have personal karma, but Prabhupada also stated that he was getting sick because of the reactions of his disciples. Now, in the case of crossing the boat, he didn't have disciples then, so it must have been the arrangement of Krishna. But no karma. He gets the reactions from the sinful activities of his disciples. Yeah. Prabhupada said like that. And both, and sometimes the will of Krishna. We also have to see that Prabhupada could have made it very easy for, or Krishna could have made it very easy for Prabhupada. But then, you know, all of us would have the perfect excuse. We could have always said, yeah, but Prabhupada was a pure devotee. So for him it was different, right? He didn't have to struggle like we, because he was a pure devotee. But we can never say that. If anybody would say that, go, ah, come on. You know, he struggled more than all of us together, right? He created for us nice temples around the world, and all we have to do is like, what time is prasad, right? And like, and he, you know, it's like, practically speaking, didn't know what he was going to eat. It's like, where he was going to stay. No money, right? So all the difficulties of Prabhupada are also Krishna's arrangement to make sure nobody can ever say that. He did the most difficult thing, more difficult than any of us. I thank you also for listening so long. Half the class has walked away, so I think maybe I should stop now. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Kijaya.